The last talk of this day is given by Valérie Camus about factors of working memory development, time-based resource sharing approach.
So we developed recently a new model called the time-based resource sharing model. In this model, processing and storage both require attention, and attention is a limited resource. Outside the focus of attention, and we'll develop all this point more extensively later on, outside the focus of attention, there's a time-related decay of memory traces. But nevertheless, we can refresh those traces through an attentional focusing, as Nelson suggested. However, only one element could be refreshed. It's not just one item, it's one element at a time that could be refreshed. And the consequence is that memory trace phase will fade away during processing episode. So the only way to have to do maintenance and processing concurrently is that you have to switch attention between processing and maintenance. So to just explain all this a little bit more, so we believe that processing and storage require attention, and this idea comes up from ACTAR framework. Indeed, in processing, within ACTAR, processing is that production rules read and update the content of working memory. And the maintenance, Nelson also proposed this, is that the activate, the short-term memory is the activate part of long-term memory. That means that both of them will require the activation of a memory item. That means that this activation is an attentional demanding activity. Is attentional demanding. So both processing and maintenance will require to share attention. But anyway, the activation is produced through an attentional focusing, and activation will decline as soon as the focus of attention is switched away. So when the item, So when processing will capture attention, then the relevant information, I mean information that you have to maintain to perform the task, will decline in short-term memory. So the only way to refresh those decay memory trays is to use the focus of attention and then to switch away this attention away from the processing. And then processing is temporarily suspended. So it's more like saying the same thing. So to refresh or to reactivate memory trays that it store in short-term memory necessitate then the focus of attention. But Oberhauer shows, and others just like Garavan, that attention can only focus to one item at a time. That means that although we believe that we have to share attention, this sharing is time-based. That means that if you have to do some processing while you store information, your focus of attention has to rapidly switch between the two activities. So for example, it's pretty small here maybe. Imagine a classic, it's a complex span in which you have to maintain the letter, and it's very small, but you have to solve operation. Imagine the operation span turn and angle, kind of. So here it's 6 plus 7 plus 8 equal 22. And you have to verify if the operation is true or false. So the idea is that you're going to start the operation, and within the process of verifying the operation, you can switch your attention briefly to reactivate the item you previously maintained, you previously encoded. So you start to do the 6 and 7, then you briefly move your attention to the item you have to maintain, TFB. Then you keep on doing the operation, 4 and 6 and 4, 10. Then you briefly switch again, and you continuously switch between the two. And this is the way you're going to manage to be able to keep in mind the letters while you, at the end, finish to be able to say, no, it's not the right answer. So it's this movement that it's continuous during the processing. So it leads us to suggest a way to define cognitive load within this view. And cognitive load is the proportion of time during which a given activity will capture attention in such a way that when attention is captured by a processing, then the item you have to maintain would suffer from a decline of activation. And then that's going to impair your recall later on. So it offers us a metric of the cognitive load, as is the duration of the attentional capture divided by the overall time you have to do the task. And it's very close. I mean, it's exactly the same idea as the definition of power in physics, that is the work that you have to do during the time you allow to do it. It's also led us to develop a new paradigm. Indeed, because time is very important, as you've just seen, we have to control this time very carefully. And so we use computer-based working memory span tasks. I mean, working memory span tasks, it's used widely in working memory studies, because you have, I mean, John presents some and others during the 2 days. You have to maintain item while you perform a task. It's very convenient because, in fact, it's a small laboratory of what we do in everyday life. I mean, every single time, you all the time have to maintain while you process information. For example, now, if you try to keep note of this, you have to maintain the words or sentence or to write it down while you process the information that I'm saying. So it's a small world in itself. But by making those tasks computer-based, then we can control the time course of the activities. And it's really important because, as I told you, within our model, time is very important. We have to keep track on this. And it also helps us to manipulate the switching, how many times you have to switch, or you can switch. Lovely music. So, for example, if you have a task in which you have to maintain words, here, rabbit and dinner, and that between the words, you have to do some processing. Imagine you have to read some digit, for example. Between the reading of this digit or within the processing, you can have three pauses that you can use to reactivate, for example, here, the word rabbit. And that's going to define, for example, an average cognitive load. But if I give you more time to do exactly the same processing here, it leaves you more possibility to reactivate the words. And then that diminishes the cognitive load. And then you will see it through the recall that it will increase your recall. But on the other hand, if I diminishing the time allowed to do this processing, you have less possibility to reactivate, and then it will increase the cognitive load. So just to give you some example, some evidence, we study quite extensively, I think, in adult mainly, this model. And just a few examples. In a similar task, as I told you, you have to maintain words and you have to read some digit, for example. We can manipulate the amount of processing you have to do in a time course. Here, let's give you kind of index of your cognitive load. Well, we show that within the same task, if we manipulate this cognitive load, the span, the average span, is proportionate to this cognitive load. And it's quite nicely proportionate. This is adults' data. Similarly, it's not just manipulating within a task. Even if you use different type of task, manipulating the amount of attentional capture evaluated by the processing time in different tasks, just like location task, is judging if a dot appear up and down on the screen, or a parity judgment of digit. No matter that those two tasks are really different, if you report this to the amount of, I mean, the duration of attention, there's the span. I mean, the amount of words or letters you're able to maintain concurrently is dependent on this value. Another example. here you see that it is true if a task is attentional demanding. For example, here is a choice reaction time. But if a task is, let's say, non-attentional demanding, or in a more politically correct way, poorly demanding, here, as a simple reaction time, a dotted parent screen, you just press a key, very, very low demand, there's no importance and there's no impact on your span, there's no impact on how many items you're able to maintain concurrently. Finally, Sophie Portrani's PhD dissertation showed that even if we manipulate the type of executive function that is involved in the processing, it could be updating, it could be a response selection, it could be inhibition as in a classic stroop, or it could be retrieval. All this involve attention. But if you report to this different task to a common value, common measure of cognitive load, the way we defined it, as you see it here, there's a nice relation between the amount of cognitive load all these different tasks involve and the amount of words or letters that you're able to maintain concurrently. So all this evidence, all this study is in adults only. Okay? It's just to bring you some evidence to support the models and the way we see it. But what is quite interesting and for today's talk is the factors that could affect the developmental increase of working memory span. So to once again repeat, I will see the processing during the task. So you have to maintain a memory item. Then you have to do a small processing episode. During the processing episode, attention is captured by the processing, and then the memory item will see its attention to decline during this time while attention is switched away. So there's a decay. But then when you finish this processing episode, you're able to reactivate the memory items during this small period of time, just before another processing episode will come up. So just to give you a draft, it's lovely, it's wave, and probably inspired by holiday. But here, imagine then this is the level of activation of the memory item. So you encode the memory item. The level of activation is about here, but we don't really know the value. But when attention is dedicated to processing, the activation of this memory item will decline during all this time. And it's only when you're able once again to move your attention to the memory item that you will be able to reactivate this item, and so on like this. That means you all the time switch between the processing and the reactivation. So within this framework, there's three sources of development differences. First of all is the amount of available attention, and I will develop this later on. There's the speed of decay and the efficiency of the refreshing mechanism. So imagine that with development, there's an increase of the attentional capacity. Then children will be able to do the processing faster. So if I'm keeping back to this waving design, the activation of the memory item will change. If it took less time to do the processing, so the decline will be smaller, and then you can reactivate for a long period of time. So by the end, you can understand that all the children are able to remember more words than younger children. If the development induces a slower decay, for the same time of processing, the curve of the decay will be slower, and then you lose less activation of the memory item, then you will be able to reactivate, even if the reactivation is exactly the same, keep constant. At the end, you have differences between the younger children and the older one. finally, another way to, another source to understand developmental differences, if there's an increase on this refreshing mechanism, if the refreshing is more efficient, that means that if you're able to activate to a higher level of activation, even if the processing took exactly the same time, even if the decay is the same, you're able to go up a little bit more. And this factor can also explain why younger kids do worse than older kids. So it might simplify, it's just three ways to try to understand the developmental differences. And so we're going to, within this CARP, I'm going to look at the different experiments we did, and that brings some evidence for this different source of developmental differences. And first of all, the amount of attentional resource. So in the very first set of studies that we did, that are really very first thing we ever did in working memory, in fact, we start to do this new paradigm, try to control for time since the beginning. And so in this task, you have an operation span very similar to Turner and Engel, except that the operation is matched for kids. And also that here, the memory items are letters and not the result of the operation or words. It's simple letters. And we compare this condition to what we call Berber span, which is the same letters as to be maintained, and the processing here is just to say ba, 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 ba. It's just an articulatory suppression task, poorly demanding compared to the operation. And this is a between subject design. I mean that we are able to match the duration of this operation and of this ba, 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 ba with this operation and for each of them. And we compare children from 9 and 11. And here, you also have a comparison with adults that is not in the original paper. So what you see, it's clear there's an increase with age, which is nothing new about that. But if we match on duration two tasks that are really different on their cognitive demand, on the attentional demand, you have a difference on the span, the number of letters they're able to remember or to maintain. And this is for all age. So from this very first study, we come up with the idea that it's quite difficult to just do not care or pay attention to the cognitive resource of the task to account for working memory span. But why is quite strange is that there's an enormous difference on the cognitive demand between solving an operation, as I showed to you, 6 plus 7 minus 4, what is the solution of that? Or just saying, ba, ba, ba. You can, even as an adult, you feel that the demand is really different. Nevertheless, there's not that dramatic decrease on the span, although there's a big change on the demand. So it's from this very first set of study, that I'm just report one of them, that we had the idea that most probably people can do some strategy or able to manage to, they're able to keep track or keep the activation, the letters to maintain. And so we suggest that they can switch their attention within they solve the operation to maintain the letters. Otherwise, we should expect a more dramatic decrease in performance. Following this work, we developed then the new paradigm in which we use more simple tasks, in which is more atomic steps of processing. And in this task, we're going to compare what we call a continuous operation span. You all also have to solve operations. So you have to maintain letters like R, and then you solve operation 4 plus 1, then you say 5, minus 2, 3 plus 1, so on. Then at the end you recall. And we compare once again with a simple, a mere articulatory suppression, say ba, ba, ba. It's the complex span design, the length increasing from 1 to 7 letters. within this design, the time is also controlled. So you have to say ba 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 for the exact same amount of time as you have to solve operation. Once again, two different tasks. So we compare these two tasks with very different demand that kids have to perform during the same duration, but we manipulate the duration. You have a short duration or long duration, but the pace at which the tasks are made are exactly the same, are constant. And also we match the number of syllables they have to say between the baba and the kos. So here you have the 9 years old and 11 years old, baba and kos, short duration and long duration. So once again, you have the differences between 9 and 11. If you look at the 9 years old, there's a big decline, once again, in the span between baba and kos, and similarly at 11. Although, I repeat, we control for the duration. They're exactly the same duration. The maintenance of the letters are constant. You also can look at, there's here no significant difference between a short and a long duration, because the pace is exactly the same in the two tasks. So from this experiment, if you control for duration, you still have a difference between the older kids and the younger. And if you make the comparison between this experiment and the first one, here, you will see that, for example, if I use the cos, here it's the same age group with same kind of population. Here your span goes from 1.5 to 2.7. But when you control for duration, there's a smaller decrease. There's a smaller increase, sorry. Here, the baba is, no, cos is 1.3 to 2. I can't see from here. Okay, 2, let's say. So we diminish, by controlling the duration, we diminish the developmental increase. So shorter delay could only, shorter delay in all the kids, could only account for part of the developmental increase in working memory span task. One step further, it's to equate for the difficulty of the operation. It's quite obvious that for an 11 years old, having to solve an operation is less demanding, the same operation is less demanding than for a 9 years old. So in this task, Nathalie Gavins compare 8 and 10 years old, for which she matched the difficulty of the task. I mean that in pre-test, she observed that solving a three operands operation leads to the same amount of correct response than in 8 years old than solving a four operands operation in 10 years old. So she matched the difficulty between 8 and 10. And once again, it's the same type of task comparing the kos and the baba, but each time it's a three-operand operation for the younger and a four-operand for the older. And she matched the number of syllables. And here, you see that even when difficulty is matched between 8 years old and 10 years old, you still have a significant difference in the span. And this difference here, when there's a when the difficulty is equating, is smaller anyway than the one here in the baba, in which there's no equation. No. We equalize, thanks, Graham, equalize the difficulty. So from this specific experiment, it's clear that when you equate difficulty in the continuous operation span, it reduces the developmental effect. But anyway, even if duration was constant and difficulty was constant, still older kids still outperform the younger. So greater efficiency, which is quite usually used as an explanation for developmental effect, and shorter delay of retention can only account, they account for we all the time see a diminution of developmental, but only partially for the developmental increase in working memory span. However, all this, the equating the duration, equating the difficulty, was at the group level. You know, on average, the 10 years old were equating to the 8 years old. So if you want to do it with an individual level, that's the attempt of this new experiment, in which still Natalie and Pierre use a reading digits task. So you have to maintain letters and read digits by sample and recall letters at the end. To equate the difficulty at an individual level, they ask the kids to read once at a classic 1 digit per second, but to do the task once again at the maximum speed, which is, of course, individually different. So in the experimental group, they do the task at a fixed level, and then at an adapted pace, which is their pace that was pre-test previously. Okay. And to make the comparison properly, because you could have test, retest, because it's 2 times the same, you have a control group in which they do twice the same task. And it's 8 and 10 years old. So first, in the control group, you have, once again, difference between 8 and 12. But also, you might observe that there's a quite nice, I mean, a quite unexpected and quite huge effect of practice, you know, because it was just 2 weeks between the two. And there's a quite large effect that 8 years old are not far from 12 years old anymore after doing the task, which is quite puzzling, you know, for understanding working memory. But on the experimental group, this session is at fixed pace, and this is the maximum speed. If you compare this group to this one, amazingly, there's barely no diminution of the difference between the 8 and the 12 years old, although this one did the task at the maximum speed. So equating here, processing efficiency barely reduces developmental differences. And so there's a very strong training effect. So if you compare experiment 3 and this new experiment, the way you design the equalization of processing efficiency lead to a more or less strong reduction of the developmental differences, which is something that we really have to figure out what happened here. So this series of experiments shows that if you try to control for delays of retention, if you control for the processing efficiency, you reduce the developmental effect, but it's still here. There's still a developmental increase in working memory span. So that leads us to come to the conclusion that there is a developmental increase on the amount of attention between, I mean, the range that we study here. This is 8 to 12. A second factor that could explain developmental effect is the efficiency of the switching mechanism, which is quite important within our model because this is the mechanism that allows to maintain letters or words or whatever. So is there a switching process in kids as we were able to show in adults? In this first experiment, we used the same reading digit span that I just showed you. You have 4 age groups, 8 to 14, in which they have to maintain letters while they read digit. And we manipulate the pace at which the digit appear on screen. So we can manipulate this rate. What you see here is that, first of all, we replicate in kids this effect that the rate or the pace is a direct link to the span for all this age. The second thing, you still have the age differences, but the slope are quite different between the age, and it's more steep in the older. So it leads that children are able to switch their attention during the processing, as we'll see in adults. Otherwise, we will not see this kind of relation between the rate and the span. But there's an age-related evolution, and it seems that the younger are less efficient, or they less use the switching mechanism. And strangely enough, is that the older are then more affected by the change of rate, because they use more the switching. But we have a very nice, we had a very nice remark from reviewers for this specific experiment. Indeed, the space here are exactly the same for all the kids. But 8 years old took longer to read a digit than a 14 years old because the processing speed changed. So in the control experiment, we take care of this. Indeed, we measure the time that an 8 years old and a 14 years old need to read a digit. That's a way to represent it. And we create different rates, different level of cognitive load that match their processing speed. That means for a high level of cognitive load, we give exactly the same amount of time that it needs at 8 to read one digit. So it was 600 milliseconds, for example. So we give just 600 milliseconds within the task, the complex task, to read the digit. And for equating the cognitive load, at 4 years old, it's about 400 milliseconds to read a digit. We give them just 400 milliseconds to read it. And then we manipulate the cognitive load to create a medium cognitive load, which is 2 times the duration they need to read a digit in both age group, but of course is not equating duration because those ones need less time. And a very low cognitive load with 4 times the time they need to read the digit. So here, we do not equate the duration, but really the cognitive load that is totally depending on the processing speed of those kids measured by the reading speed, or evaluating by the reading speed. And if we contrast the two groups, extreme group of the previous experiment, 8 and 14, with this cognitive load, we still have a relationship between the load, the way we defined it, and the span at 8 and 14. And although here, the cognitive load is constant and totally dependent on the processing speed to these kids, we still have a difference between the 8 and the 14, with 14 years old outperforming 8 years old. So this leads us to think that there is an increase of the attentional resource at that time of life. But the interaction between age and cognitive load that we had in previous experiment disappear here. There's no more this interaction. It's nearly parallel. So whatever is linked, the cognitive load with the span, is also depending to the processing speed that increase at that moment. However, if we look at the time they need to, how do you measure that? So this time, instead of plotting the data, it's exactly the same data, except that I plot the cognitive load, I actually use the proper time they had to do the task. As I told you, they had different duration to do the task because we adapt this to their processing speed. And here, you see that nevertheless, at 14, the slope here that this is the time available to refresh the item and the span. The slope here is steeper and is even the double that at 8 years old. So the rate of refreshing of the mechanism we assume that is responsible for the maintenance is twice larger at 14 than at 8. And it's even greater than the increase of processing speed. So processing speed could account a part for this developmental effect, but not entirely, because the processing, the developmental increase of processing was just 1.2 at that time. So these two first experiments show that there is a change in this refreshing mechanism between 7, 8 to 14, to later, to adolescence. But is there an age in which you do not use, I mean, kids do not use this refreshing mechanism? So in this task, we contrast five and 7 years old using a color span task. In this task, of course, we have to develop a task that it could be performed with such a young kids. And they have to maintain animals. The animals were presented with picture, and the experimenter say, oh, this is frog, this is horse, and they repeat, and they have to maintain the name of the animal. And between the processing speed, the processing component is just naming colors. I mean, you can have no color, or two color, or four color, and color are very basic, yellow, blue, or red. That we met, we verified that they know. So you can see here that at 7, we replicate. It's during the same. Is it the same time? The same duration? Yeah, it's during the same time. So here at 7, we replicate the pace effect that we usually had with all the kids. So when they have to read two color, they're better to maintain animal names than when they have four color. So at 7, there's one more time an evidence that they use the switching and the refreshing. But at 5, as you can see here, there's no difference. There's no significant difference. You can show two colors or four colors. There's absolutely no difference here. I mean that they do not use any switching at that time. Nevertheless, you see that if you present no color in both cases, I mean, any intervening task will affect the maintenance within this at this age. In a final experiment, we use also this color naming span task also at 5 and 7 years old. But this time, we control perfectly for pace, for duration and pace effect. That means that using the same design, we present either one color, for example, in 2,000 milliseconds, or two colors during the same duration, or two colors in 4,000 milliseconds. In this case, here, you have exactly the same pace as here. And as we expect within the model, if you use the refreshing mechanism, then for this one color in 2,000 milliseconds, two color in 4,000, we expect to have no differences because it's exactly the same pace. But here, two color in 2,000 milliseconds, the pace is much higher and should induce a decrease in recall performance if children use the refreshing mechanism. On the other hand, if they do not use the refreshing mechanism as we expect, I mean the rapid micro-level switching, then duration should be the main factor because they have to maintain here information for 2,000, but here for 4,000 milliseconds, and then the performance must be worse here than here. So you have two conditions with the same pace and two conditions with the same duration. And we perform this test at 5 and 7. If you first look at 7 years old, the two conditions with the same pace do not differ. However, the condition that has a higher pace induces lower span. It's not exactly span. We use a more fine-grained measure, the number of animals they're able to recall. So at 7 years old, as we predict within the model, there's a pace effect, but duration is not relevant. However, the pattern results are really different at 5. The two conditions that lead to the same duration here, whatever you have to, the kids have to process one color or two colors, leads to no difference in recall. However, when the duration increases, you have a decrease in recall. Although if you compare to this one, they got the same processing to do to name two colors. So at 5, there's no pace effect, but duration. The idea is here that between 5 and 7, we observe a qualitative change, although Chris, where is Chris? I'm short-sighted. Oh, sorry. Chris suggests that maybe difference between qualitative, no, not that much difference between qualitative and quantitative change. But anyway, I will think in terms of qualitative change here, that at 7 years old, they're able to use this micro-level switching that between the processing episode, they can rapidly switch the attention to reactivate the animal mane. But at 5, on the other hand, they probably use more a micro level, or maybe not even, but micro level switching that John and Graham suggest. That, I mean, it's only when they see the animal, this is cat, I activate cat, then I read color. But when I'm reading color, I do not anymore think about a cat. And then it's only the duration and the decline that the memory item will suffer from the decline of activation that could explain this result. So to conclude, by now we have some evidence, I mean we start again, I will say, to be interesting on this problem of the developmental increase in working memory span. So we have few evidence that lead us to believe that within the period of time between 7 and 14, there's an increase in the amount of available attention that could explain the increase of working memory span. There's also evidence that is, first, a change in the use of the refreshing mechanism, and then, after 7, an increase of efficiency. We didn't do, and we haven't done anything about the speed of decay, but Nelson did quite a lot, so I think it's fair enough. So thanks for everybody to be here. Thanks to my twin brain, I will say, Pierre Barouillet, for all this work. I know we'll be shocked. And thanks to the mental power of the girls that all are involved in this work. That would be impossible to do.
Thank you, Valerie. Some questions?
Very nice, interesting talk. Stepping back a bit and thinking about your theory. What you're saying is that if an activity is attention demanding, then for adults, let's say,
yeah,
or older children,
yeah,
then it's pace. Everything's pace dependent. But if it's a Bob-Boss band, then it's not pace dependent. But it seems to me the way you've set the theory out is in order to have that absolute pace dependence, you have to make a dichotic distinction between attention demanding or not attention demanding. And one can wonder if there might be some types of activity that are in between Baba and attention demanding, intermediate amount. And the reason I bring this up is when I think about your developmental trends in the range when they are refreshing,
yeah,
suppose you gave a secondary reaction time, you might find that what's happening as kids get older is they not only get faster at reading the numbers, but it becomes less attention demanding, like maybe it becomes intermediate between Baba and, in other words, let me just ask one more thing, and then you can put it together. But suppose you equated older and younger kids, not at 5, but older If, suppose you equated them on secondary probe reaction time during number reading, if you added that. And if they were equated in that way, maybe they would have the same, maybe they would have the same span then.
No, I doubt. Because look, I mean, if it's more or less as you say that when we equate the operation that, you know, here when Natalie make the comparison between the three operand and the four operand, is it?
I'm saying
because what I first when you were talking, I was reacting because it's just as if you make a difference between the attentional demand and the duration of a task.
Yeah, I'm saying, what is it possible that...
But within the model, does it make sense? Because the idea is that if you use the focus of attention, it's totally use, it's not partially use.
Well, that's the model, but I'm wondering...
Yeah, that's test the model, but it's not to work.
I always like to disconfirm. And so the thing is, in a way, I shouldn't have even questioned it because I like the fact that
No, there's no problem.
The difference in the model is the amount of attention, because that's the same thing I'm saying. But to try to disconfirm both of us, if you equated the secondary probe reaction time during number reading in the older, younger groups, and then if you found that then their span comes out the same, you would have to say, wait, it isn't just all or none attention. It's maybe in between, or maybe it varies. You know,
you mean something like Robbie Kay's with that we told previously that, for example, if we give a reading digit task in which it took the same amount of time for older kids to read the digit than for a younger one.
I'm saying that if you're comparing the number reading speed, then in order to get the older kids to be as preoccupied as the younger ones, you may have to make it even faster for the older ones, not just equate it to their maximal speed, but you might maybe when the older ones are at their maximal speed, they still have some free attention.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But it's true.
You are probably right because it's possible that it's always just possible to automatize the activity. And in this way, I think that the duration do no longer make the principal component of the task. Because I remember that... when visiting Klaus Oberauer in Potsdam many years ago, he submitted, it's a real world, he submitted subjects to hundreds and hundreds trials of a dual task. And at the end, the cost of the dual task tend to disappear, and at the end, disappear totally. That when the task is over and over automatized, I think that it's possible to share attention between two activities. I don't know why, but how exactly it could be possible, but it seems to be.
Well, I mean, what we need, to be fair, what we need is that we don't really know how this switching happens. You know, it's we discussed about this previously, but I use your measure of saying that it's probably 40 milliseconds to switch quickly, but it seems that it's still quite unclear how people do this, you know. We all have this feeling that we're able to quickly also switch attention and just coming back, but how we manage to do this, you know, it's still unknown, honestly. You know.
I think I am particularly interested with... the whole thing is very interesting, but the way you prove that there is no refreshing in 5 years, I think is a very elegant experiment, and I'd like to congratulate you.
Thanks.
Now there is a question that comes to my mind, which is why 5 and not 4?
I'm not God.
Those numbers, why 7 and not 10? Well, if you don't have an answer, let me ask, propose an answer see your reaction. If I take a problem-solving approach, obviously, I mean, I am the subject. It is quite intuitively clear that if I refresh, I reboot, so to say, the trace, Well, it will last longer. But of course, to reboost or not to reboost will depend on whether I have had the idea of doing that. If I haven't been trained and your subject have not, what does it take to have that idea? And I would claim that the minimum would be 2 units, because I am refreshing, I'm going there and return here to continue this task. I have 2 terms. And I have an operative scheme, a procedure for going there and returning. And the counting is 3. And according to our approach, 3 is the K number, that the K we share, the K number of 7. And the K number of 5 is 2. So that 2 should not be able to have the idea, but 7 should, which is what you are finding. Yeah. My question is, what do you think of that explanation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's where processing, information processing theory are very close to UT, because we can also say similarly that, in fact, they have to maintain different goals at the same time, and this is the problem, that you have to maintain the goal that I have to remember the words, but I keep on having to do read colors and matching all this, and I still have to coordinate these 2 things. Yeah, it's very similar.
A question about what was, I think, the penultimate set of experiments. And as I think I understand it, you were arguing that for a given rate of change presentation or a given opportunity to refresh an item, the older children showed a much greater improvement in their recall performance, so that you had something like a 1.2 change in rate of presentation, or giving you a 2 times increase in memory. And it does seem a rather dramatic improvement, and it made me wonder whether one thing that a participant might be able to do is to chunk or recode what they're doing. It's one way of getting a very large increase in output from a fairly small difference. So if there is anything in that, maybe you have to have a 4th change in your set of possibilities for development, and that is the utilization or in some way taking advantage of chunking or binding procedures as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree. I mean, it's just the 3 sources was a simple and simplistic way of dividing, you know, to program, to make a research agenda and start to do this. But it's obvious also that, for example, the amount of attention will impact not just the speed of processing, but probably also the level of activation I can reach. And I agree, that we also can understand.
There is possibly other factors, because as you suggest, strategies are probably very important, because in one experiment we observed a dramatic increase just by test retest, and in 2 weeks children increase their span of about the same as a developmental increase from 8 to 12. Yeah. And this suggests that in the first test, children discovered some strategy, probably, that can use right from the start in the second set. And so they have an increased performance. So probably there are many other factors, including strategies, coding strategies, and so on.
Sorry, just following on from that. If that is so, then how confident can we be that there really is something like a qualitative shift from the data that we've seen? Because perhaps indeed 5-year-olds do not apply or have not stumbled across these strategies yet. Should we not maybe conduct training studies or give them instructions to see whether they actually can show this kind of pattern?
It's quite related also to one question, that maybe you can train kids and see if they're able to use this strategy. It's really a brand new experiment we just finished, but Yeah, absolutely. Just, I mean, just also, it leads to a more general question in development psychology. Is a question to discover a strategy, or you unable to do it anyway? You know, maybe, you know, maybe the best strategy to move is to fly, but sorry, I can't do it. But you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's.
So, and, but it's true that a training study will answer, or bring some answers.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait for those results, I suppose. So, okay. I wonder, though, if I may just follow on while I'm having the mic here, I guess. Similar question as to the one that I had at the previous talk. In experiment 7, I think you're second to last, in order to make the case that 5-year-olds' performance is different from that of the older children, you say there was not a slope, there was a decrease.
Could you perhaps put that back up?
Because it kind of looked similarly a possibility that there might be a floor effect in that at both levels.
It was also a question.
Yeah, at both levels you only have, one as a mean, which is really rather low if you think
but
about it.
No, it's not the lower. Okay.
Yeah, there.
Yeah, there. They can really have one is the, you know, it's a span measure. I mean, they have different try at one. So they can have less than one, because one means that they succeed to all the tries. The way we, you have to know that. The way we score the span is to have one, that means you succeed all this try at one. So you can have some kids that succeed just one try out of five at one, or two tries, so they can, you know. And if it's floor effect, I mean, we have absolutely no change also in the SD. Standard deviation here. So it's not the floor one. They really can have less than that.
Well, my question was on that, really. It was whether it was a floor effect, or more the question was, if your span is only one, then certain strategies, it's a bit like flying, they're not open to you.
Yeah.
And whether the... It was a question of cause and effect somehow, whether the 5-year-olds can't do something because they can only remember one item, or whether they can only remember one item because they don't have the strategy. And I don't know.
No, yeah, I think we don't know. It's true. We don't know.
So it's time to have a coffee, in fact. So thank you, Valerie.
Thanks.